Yeah, thank you. And the late Billy Stewart is getting us started today. While I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us, there has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. And the backyard grilling is easy.
Yeah, almost anything you cook indoors, you can cook outdoors, only better.
He is a Hall of Famer, one of those one-name celebrities like Cher.
I'm Meathead from AmazingRibs.com.
Chicago's very own.
One of only about 40 living barbecue Hall of Famers, and I got a new book out called The Meathead Method.
I'm guessing your parents did not give you that name.
Actually, you did, but not at birth. It goes back to the Archie Bunker days. Dad and I used to watch All in the Family.
Let me tell you something, Mr. Bunker.
No, let me tell you something, Mr. Stivic. You are a meathead.
Yeah, Dad and I were on opposite sides of the political fence. He was no Archie Bunker. He wasn't a bigot. But I was a, you know, young liberal college kid. And when I got into cooking seriously, it just kind of stuck.
And Meathead has a new cookbook that came out last month. And why did the world need another cookbook?
That's a fair question. I write differently than most other barbecue cooks. There's just a ton of barbecue cookbooks out there. But I'm a science geek. You know, this is 2025. We're a very advanced society. You know, we carry around in our back pocket a computer more powerful than the one that went to the moon. People who are cooking nowadays want to know more than do step one, do step two, just shut up and do it. Yeah, they want to know, why do I do step one? What happens if I skip step two? What happens if I exchange white sugar for brown sugar? And so I've tried in my books, I have two books, one called Meathead, The Science of Barbecue and Grilling, and this one, The Meathead Method, which is all about methods and techniques. But the first half of both books are really science books. They explain what is protein, what is carbohydrate, what is fat, what is fire, what is heat, what is smoke, what happens when heat interacts with protein and fat. And I try to do it in lay terms. You know, the old saying about give a man a fish or teach a man to fish. And I've really tried to teach people the concepts. You know, and it's interesting. It is an outdoor cookbook. It's a barbecue and grilling cookbook. But the principles are exactly the same for indoors. Proteins like to stick to metal. It's usually not a big problem with meats because they eventually release. But with fish, it's doom. I mean, fish just does not want to let go of the hot metal. So we try to figure out why it's doing it and how to solve the problem. There's a lot of cool new stuff in the Meathead Method. My first book, the Meathead Science book, is a lot of why and how. This book, I try to teach new Okay, you like fried chicken?
Yeah.
You make it in the house very often?
No.
No, you know why? I know why. It's a bloody darn mess. It spatters all over the countertop. It spatters all over the stovetop. It gets on the floor. It sets off the smoke alarm. The house stinks for a week. I'll tell you how to make fried chicken. You go out back. You turn on your gas grill. You turn one burner on high. Leave the other burners off. Put a Dutch oven, big tall side Dutch oven, on the side with the burners, pour in 2 inches of oil. When it hits 350, you put in your chicken. After about 15 minutes, you've got incredibly beautiful fried chicken. You want to roll around in flour or cornstarch and egg whites, do all that. You got beautiful fried chicken, and who cares if it spatters? Who cares if it smokes? And you're not going to set your grill on fire. You're not knocking over a 5-pound Dutch oven. And God forbid if you did, all you do is you lose a $500 grill. If you do that indoors, you lose a $500,000 house. So Fried chicken all you want. Frying chicken is a backyard barbecue recipe now.
Which leads us to the theme of your cookbook.
Yeah, almost anything you cook indoors, you can cook outdoors, only better. I got another one for you. You like Chinese food?
Yeah.
Of course you do. And you can usually make it pretty good on your stovetop. But it's never quite as good as from that neighborhood Chinese joint. And the reason is they put their wok on top of a volcano. There is just a massive amount of energy in those burners that they have. And your stovetop can't equal that. So what happens is you throw the steaks, you know, cut up the pieces of meat, the chicken, the steak, throw it in your wok or your frying pan, and before long, water comes out. All the juices come out. And instead of frying, you're now braising. The trick is you go out back and you get a charcoal chimney. A charcoal chimney looks like a coffee can, and you put crumpled up newspaper in the bottom and charcoal in the top. You light the newspaper, it lights the charcoal, and it's about 1,000 degrees at the top of this charcoal chimney. Now, people use it to start the charcoal for their grill, but we're going to cook on top of the charcoal chimney. You put a wok on top of the charcoal chimney, and you're sitting on top of the same volcano as the Chinese restaurant. And you can make fantastic Chinese food in a wok on top of a charcoal chimney. Chinese cooking, Asian cooking is now barbecue.
Nice. How about another tip?
If you've still got one of those old dial thermometers in your junk drawer in the kitchen, take it out. Back over it with your car. It's a worthless piece of junk. You need to go out and spend $30 on a good, modern, instant-read digital thermometer probe. Not the gun type, but it's a probe. You stick it in the meat, and it's not going to go and deflate. Meat is 75% water. You take an 8-ounce filet mignon, it's 6 ounces of water. You know, if you lose a half a teaspoon, you're not going to hurt a darn thing. In fact, more water evaporates during the cooking process than will ever come out from a thermometer. So to get your food precisely cooked, poultry, chicken is very often contaminated with salmonella. You do not want to serve grandma salmonella on Memorial Day and then spend the rest of the day in the hospital. You want to test your chicken and make sure it's a minimum of 160 to 165. That kills all salmonella, kills all bacteria. So if you cut into a steak, you can get a sense for its color. But if it's evening, if it's dark, you got a floodlight on it. You know, the color of the light changes things. Plus, what's interesting is, let's talk steak again. You cut into a steak, it changes color as it's exposed to oxygen. So you can't use the color of the food to tell you. It used to be all the cookbooks you have at home say, cook chicken till the juices run clear. That was true 20 years ago, but the way they raise chickens today is different. And often when the chicken is perfectly safe, it's cooked to 160 degrees and there's all the bacteria are dead, the juices might still be pink. And it has nothing to do with anything that's dangerous. Digital thermometer, go buy one.
You do a lot of myth-busting in this book, including this one. Never use soap or metal utensils on carbon steel or cast iron.
Yeah, you know, this is, again, something from the old days. But modern soaps are fairly mild. And doggone it, sometimes when you're using a cast iron or carbon steel pan or a griddle, it builds up a lot of junk, especially if you've cooked fish. You don't want to then go cook a steak on top of a cast iron pan that just cooked fish. You've got to clean it. And so you can use mild soaps. It's not going to destroy or damage anything. If you have to scrub real hard because there's a really gunky buildup, then go to re-season it. Just, you know, a thin layer of oil, heat it up on the stovetop, and that re-seasons it, makes it non-stick. But I got to tell you, I am slowly but surely weaning myself away from my beloved cast iron because of this, because it's a pain to clean and maintain. There's new pans out there that are incredibly slippery, nonstick, that are ceramic, not enamel, ceramic. And they're just fantastic. You don't want to put Teflon over high heat. It creates gases that are dangerous. But these new ceramics don't create gases. They're very inert. And I'll tell you, you do an omelet in a ceramic omelet pan, and you watch it slide around like a ski slope. It's fantastic. I love those things.
Here's another one. Actually, two. Cooking with cast iron is healthy. Cooking with cast iron is unhealthy.
Yeah, some people think that the iron itself comes out during the cooking process and it gets into the food, and that makes it healthy. You're talking about a couple of molecules. I mean, there's just not enough in the cast iron to do anything positive or negative about it. You know, listen, I don't ever write about health. I write about safety a lot, but not health. But I do have one bit of health advice that I share. You eat about 1,000 meals a year. If you eat 3 meals a day, 3 times 365, you eat about 1,000 meals a year. If you're going to live to the average age of 80, you're going to eat 80,000 meals. You can have some Cheetos every now and then. You can have some pepperoni. It's not going to take 5 minutes off your lifespan. You're going to die faster worrying about what you eat than eating anything improper. So do what Mom used to say, a little bit of everything. Don't go crazy. Stay away from junk food. You'll be fine. Stop worrying about what you eat.
I love that. Well, here's a Chicago favorite, beer can chicken.
Oh, yeah. This is, look, first of all, it looks so cool, doesn't it? You know, you got this bird sitting there like a little Buddha, and it tastes great. It really does. But the reason it tastes great is because it's roast chicken. Roast chicken always tastes great. I mean, it's one of the great wonders of the culinary world, roast chicken. But the beer can has nothing to do with it. Beer is 90% water. Water evaporates at 212 degrees. You stick a beer can up a 38-degree chicken when you take it out of the fridge, and you have just built a chicken koozie. This is not going to evaporate any beer, because you're not going to get that chicken above 160, 165. It's not getting to 212. And beside, even if the beer could evaporate, it would touch only a small portion of the meat inside the shoulder area. It's not going to try. There's no super highways in a chicken. It's not going to travel all the way down to the breast and the legs. Besides, meat is 75% water to begin with. It's a chicken's fully saturated. There's no room for any more moisture in there. Who wants a chicken to taste like beer? Roast chicken's fabulous all by itself. Drink the beer. Just drink the beer. Have fun. If you want to have a little Buddha, you can get little wire racks that you can sit the chicken on. But the beer does nothing.
Okay, here's another myth. Never squish a burger with your spatula when it's on the grill.
Oh, yeah. This is something that you know, everybody, all the cookbooks tell you, when you put the burger down, don't smash it with your spatula. And that's usually pretty good advice, because most burgers are about 80% lean, 20% fat. And if you smash it with your spatula, a lot of that melted fat, which is flavor, and the juices are going to come out and land on the fire. Well, what's interesting is when those juices land on the fire, they vaporize and go back up and land on the surface of the meat and give it some flavor. But if you've done the smushing, you can end up with a fairly hard, dry hockey puck. Well, how do you get the benefit of the flavor from the vaporization without making a hockey puck? It's simple. Ask your butcher to give you 70-30 meat instead of 80-20. That is 70% lean, 30% fat. Now, that's a lot more fat. But hey, listen, burgers are not diet food to begin with. So who cares if there's just a little bit more fat? Now that you've got a 70-30 burger, you can smush it. The juices go down, vaporize, come back up, flavor the meat, and you come away with an 80-20 burger that is delicious and not dry.
Is that the concept behind the Smashburger trend right now?
Well, Smashburger is a little different because there's no charcoal underneath, or it works on a gas flame or a charcoal flame. On a Smashburger, you're working on top of a hot metal surface. And so the meat is in direct contact with the hot metal. But yes, if you do a Smashburger, you'll see a ring of juices around the meat. And there's a great way to take advantage of them. It's called the Oklahoma Burger. And what you do is you take your burger patty, you get about 4 ounces of burger, it's about the size of a golf ball, and you take that golf ball and you throw it down on top of your griddle or a cast iron pan or a frying pan of any sort and smash it as flat as you can, working the edges. You want to get the edges thin so that they get crispy. And then you take a handful, maybe 3 ounces of thinly sliced onion and smash it on top of that burger. And just let it sit there until the bottom gets a nice dark mahogany brown color and flip it. When you flip it, those onions are now sitting in the juices from the burger. And boy, do they get flavorful. And this is a technique that's real popular in Oklahoma. They call it the Oklahoma Onion Burger. And I got to tell you, it really takes your quarter pounder to the next level.
Congratulations on the book. It's a beautiful book, well illustrated.
Can I tell you?
Yeah.
I did all the photography.
Wow.
Well, I got my master's at the Art Institute of Chicago. I'm a photographer, and all those pictures are mine. I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, you ought to be. They're beautiful.
Thank you.
What are we at here? Almost 400 pages?
Yeah, it's voluminous, but it's digestible.
I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.